What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. On this episode, I got a chance to sit down and chat with Travis Rogers. Before I get into the details of the episode, I just want to remind you guys the Patreon page is up and running. It's a great way to support the show. There's all sorts of different levels and rewards and loyalty rewards, programming, Mental Monday extends, all that stuff. If you don't want to do that, if you could share, like, subscribe, tell your friends, all that. And if you don't want to do that and you just want to sit and listen, that's cool too. I appreciate you guys. This shit will always be free because I enjoy doing it. As far as this episode's concerned, I got a chance to sit down and chat with Travis Rogers, a.k.a. Papa Bear Rogers, or Papa Rogers. He's sick. He is a really strong raw lifter. looks like a maniac. He's actually a really sweet dude and does a lot of awesome stuff, charity work, works with kids. He's a really kind-hearted person, and quite frankly, he's strong as fuck. So I don't want to give away too much about the episode, other than it's very interesting, compelling. He's a really interesting guy, really smart and well-spoken. So don't want to say anything else. Just want to remind you guys, check out the new gym page. It is Anchor Athletics NH. Make sure you follow that for all the updates on the new gym. But other than that, here is episode 119 of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. Enjoy it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. On this episode, I am joined by Travis Rogers. Truth be told, I don't know very much about this guy. All I know is that we started following each other on the Instagram, and he's covered in tattoos and is strong as fuck. So I'm like, I must talk to this person. So I'm stoked to have him on and learn about him. So, Travis, how are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing good, man. Just got done locking up the gym and heading home.
Hell yeah. So we were kind of talking off before we started recording here. Where are you based out of, and what's the name of your gym?
So the gym I own is called the Bear Cave, and it's actually the headquarters for Maryland and Delaware USPA. We're in Salisbury, Maryland, which is about 10 minutes from Salisbury University College and about 3 minutes from the mall. So it's a pretty central location down here.
Sick. So let's get like some of the easy questions out of the way here. How old are you, and when did you and how did you find lifting weights or powerlifting in general?
So February, I turned 32. So I'm just about to turn 32. And I probably started lifting when I was around 22, 23 years old. I never lifted during high school or anything like that. I actually ran cross country and track, so I was really, really tiny. Grew up on a farm, so I mean, I was naturally strong, doing some of like AA bailing and things like that. But I really found lifting when I decided to get sober and just kind of had to replace one addiction with another. And honestly, as cliche as it sounds, I'm definitely one of those guys that kind of looks at powerlifting as something that saved my life.
Yeah, I hate saying those same words, but I've said them and I feel that way where it's like, it does sound cliche, but like facts are facts. So, first of all, I want to congratulate you on cleaning your life up, and that's like a really ugly place to be. Anyone who knows my story knows that I've been there as well. How many years off the shit have you been?
So my wife is December 21st, so she's 1 month ahead of me. So my 8-year sobriety date is January 21st.
Okay, and you guys did that like together?
Yep. We decided to do that together. It took me a little extra month to, you know, get my shit together, but we decided, you know, we really liked each other, and if we were going to stay together, that this needed to happen regardless, and, you know, why not do it together?
Fuck yeah, dude. Well, yeah, that's a, it's a really polarizing discussion. And I know he said we didn't really get into the depths of it, but I do want to like make a comment on it that it's like, it's funny that telling people about that kind of, you can judge them based on how they react to you telling them, you know, like if you say like, oh, I'm in recovery, and they kind of pull back and treat you different, it's like, well, you just told me everything I need to know about you.
Yeah, that's really, very, very telling detail with people and how they react to that statement.
It's like, I guess you're fucking perfect then. So I guess you're better than me or whatever. That shit's funny because some people do get very like judgy off rip when they hear it. And to me, I'm like proud. I don't want to say I'm proud to say it, but like I'm proud of what I've turned my life around to being. And it seems like you are as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, as cliche as that statement is, and like, I'm just like you, like it is kind of weird to say out loud. And of course, like I do think it's very overplayed, but I mean, when you talk about that stuff with people, you know, you do get those two reactions, whether it's a withdrawal and kind of a withhold to what you're saying to them, they kind of shrink away, or they're like, oh shit. So like, this really was life changing for you.
Yeah, for sure, man. And like, I think lifting weights, like at first for me anyway, it was like, it was definitely like an escape from all that stuff. And it did. And then like, now it's turned into like just a passion for me, and I love doing it. Do you still view it as a therapeutic thing, or have you kind of crossed over to it being like a career, athleticism, whatever you want to call it?
I wouldn't necessarily say I've made a career out of it. I'd say it's definitely a huge part of my livelihood. Like, I'm a 10th grade and 12th grade school teacher. During the day, I own a gym at night. I run a lot of the stuff on the East Coast for the USBA. I work for the USBA Foundation. I own a charity. But I mean, like, those are all kind of things that have either, you know, become very much part of the powerlifting, like, area and idea I'm about, or kind of blossom from that.
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude. I love that. And I think it's really sick. Like, we kind of went back and forth for everybody listening. this is our fourth attempt, I think.
Yeah, fourth.
Where it's like, he's running the gym, I'm just trying to get this one off the ground a little bit. And like, it's just been crazy, like the schedule. So it's always sick to hear somebody who like understands the amount of work that goes into, you know, like running your own spot. And you have like another place you have to be as well. I have another business, obviously, with Trigger Warning and all that, but it's all online. So I'm sure your workload is crazy being a teacher and all that. But I kind of want to circle back. So you got into lifting like later in life than most people. And it seems like that's sort of, just with your background and stuff from what little I know, like that's sort of like, you know, I don't want to say tale as old as time, but I was the same way where it was like, I got into it later. Like, how did you find like the sport of powerlifting? Because it's so, now I feel like it's much bigger, but fucking 8 years ago, that's not the case. So like, how did you find the actual sport of powerlifting?
So when I got cleaned up, and I was working, probably my first summer with the football team and like working with the school, I was also working out with a group of guys that I've known for a little while, and they were all massive, way stronger than me. And I'm 5'5", probably by the time I started working out and had gotten clean, I was still only about like 140, 150 pounds.
Okay.
So I was really, really, really tiny. I mean, you know, picture your very stereotypical, like, skinny addict. That's basically what I look like. I look like a skeleton.
Yep.
So yep. I was definitely that guy. So, and, you know, when people see old pictures of me, they never believe it was the same guy. But when I was listening to these guys, you know, I started putting on some size, putting on some strength, and we had an unspoken rule. It was like, you know, if they were going to do, you know, 100-pound dumbbells, because I was half their size, I needed to do half the weight.
Okay.
So if they were doing 100s, I had to do 50s. And eventually, once I got stronger, they're like, okay, well, you need to do 3/4 of what we're doing. I'd do 75s. And it was like, you know, after that, for a while, and that encouragement, they were like, dude, for your weight and your size, like, you're strong as shit. Like, have you ever competed in powerlifting? And at the time, I was like, what's that? And they're like, something you'd probably be pretty fucking good at. So, I talked to my friend, and he kind of, like, just kind of, he didn't know much about it either. He just had seen it on YouTube and stuff, and he was like, you know, maybe you could Google some meets or find out where to compete. And a couple months later, I signed up for my first USPA meet.
No shit. Do you remember your numbers and, like, how much you weighed?
I think my first meet, I was probably, like, 170 pounds, so I was weighing in light for 181. I knew nothing about wraps at that point, so I was probably wearing some, like, hand-me-down knee sleeves. And I think my squat was, like, probably somewhere in the mid-fours, like 440, 450. I might have benched my first 300, whatever that kilo jump is, like 303. And my deadlift was always pretty decent for my size, so it was probably around, like, mid-fives.
Okay, yeah, I mean, those are respectable numbers, like, especially at 81 in sleeves, walked out. I mean, like, my first meet was a 220 bare knee and went like 505, 320, 575 or something like that. So, like, to do what you did at 81 is really fucking good. Did you, like, what was your first meet experience like? Like, did you have anyone help you prep for it, or were you just like, fuck it, like, smoke them if you got them, like, let's go?
So my first one, my wife did with me, and we kind of just prepped each other. I mean, obviously, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't have coaches or anything like that.
Sure.
And I mean, I, as an English teacher, of course, I like to read. So, of course, I did a lot of online reading on, like, how to peak and stuff like that. And, of course, it was sloppy. It's your first one. But, no, we didn't really have anybody help. We just were, like, we'd been doing so much together and getting prepared for not only that, but just, like, you know, sobriety and life in general with each other. We were like, fuck it, let's just do this together.
Dude, you know what's funny is, like, and you did pretty well, like, and you did well, and, like, I'm sure she did pretty well, too. And it's, like, it's funny because as you kind of, like, make your way up, you know, the ranks or get better at the sport, I feel like at first it's like, fuck it, it's not that hard. Like, I just have to get stronger, and then I have to be, like, my strongest on this one day. Like, it's not a big deal. And then in the middle, like, when you're starting to get good, you, like, overthink it, and then, like, as you get over that hump, it becomes like, dude, it's just it, like, becomes the same thing again. Like, it's just lifting weights. So it, like, I feel like once you get past that, like, but those early stages, it's so pure because it's so straightforward. It's like, oh, we're just gonna, like, go there and lift these weights, like, as much as we can. And it's like it's a much more pure, less stressful thing, it feels like.
It's so weird you say that. I was literally just talking about that the other day, because it's like that middle section you were talking about where, like, it's like your first, like, you know, meets number, like, 4, 5, and 6, like the middle ground.
Yeah.
You're like, you overthink and overanalyze everything. But then, like, as I got out of that stage and got, like, you know, into the top ranks, it was like, it, like you said, it became pure again. It became like, I'm gonna go throw down and just have fun.
Yeah, like, it's just lifting weights, right? And I think part of it is also, like, you understand that you can have the best peaking cycle you've ever had and go to a meet and just shit down your leg just because. Like, just because that's life and that shit. Like, yeah. Like, it's hard to explain that to people sometimes, but it's like sometimes you can do every single fucking thing right and for some reason it just didn't work and you have a shit meet or you bomb or whatever. And, like, I think approaching it where it's just like, yo, I'm just going to go lift weights. I'm going to take it seriously, but understand that at the end of the day, it's lifting weights.
And I think too, it's like, once you've had the cards, like, stacked so many times against you and still came out on top, or the opposite, like you said, like, had that perfect meet and it's still just, or a perfect prep and it just went to shit. It's like, you realize, like, you basically don't have a choice but to have fun with it because, like, it's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah. Dude, I've been through it several times, and it's like, it's funny too, because sometimes you have like the trash peaking cycle, or you like jump in a meet last minute and like you just hit it just right. It's like, I try to explain that to my clients. It's like, if somebody knew the exact way to peak every person perfectly and they go 9 for 9 at every meet, then there would be no coaches. There would basically be no sport, because everybody would just be squatting 1,000 pounds and benching 1,000 pounds. Like, yeah. there would be no mystery to it, and it wouldn't be a fucking sport. So you went, you know, mid fours into 300s and then into the 500s. What are your best numbers now since then?
Well, I'm really stoked. So I wasn't planning on doing a ski to meet last year. As I've gotten older, my knees have gotten pretty sore. So I usually tend to do classic roll with wraps. But I tore my calf 2 weeks out from a meet. And so I said, fuck it, wraps hurt, but sleeves don't. So I just basically had 7 days, took an opener, and then went to a meet in sleeves.
Shit.
And it ended up actually going really well, and it was like the top 13th total of all time.
Sick. What are the numbers?
I think my last one I just squat. I was super scared about the calf, so I was a little conservative. It was 300 kg squats, so 661. Bench was like 452, and the dead was, I want to say, 738.
At what, 98?
Yeah, I weighed in a little. I was actually under that meet. I think I weighed in like 195, 196.
Okay, and that's USPA walked out, all that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, that's what's that total equal? I can't do the math in my head.
I think my best sleeve one is 1852. My best with wraps is 1907.
Okay, all right, sick. Yeah, so that shit's like insane to me. Like, obviously, like, I'm a multiply guy, so like I look at walked out squats and like I just my initial thought is I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to do that. And even like I did a single ply meet. I actually squatted a world record like a few months ago. Well, now it's like 6 months ago in single ply. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, like, I don't want to walk this shit out. Like, I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, oh, that'd be cool if I did it in like, you know, a USPA meet or something and like walked it out. And then I was like, fuck that. Like, this is no thanks. Like, it's sketchy to me. So, it seems like have you always been in the USPA and always done like full blown, like walked out raw squats or what?
So I switched back and forth before I became the USPA chairman and before I became a USPA national ref.
Okay.
So I still switch between, USPA and RPS.
Okay.
So I do compete in feds with monos. I'm actually signed up for the American Pro this summer for my first WRPF meet, and they use a mono.
Do you still walk them out, like, or do you train?
Yeah. You actually. They have a checklist when you register, and you can actually tell them ahead of time if you're going to walk it or not.
Okay.
So I will definitely be walking mine on all accounts, just because I've actually tried to do the mono, and I don't know if it's the way I pick it, but like, man, by the time I get to 500 pounds, it just kills my groin. There's something about like that extra step and a half, the walkout, that just like resettles my hips.
I've actually heard that. Yeah, I've actually heard some people say that before, where like the walkout kind of helps them get tighter.
Yeah.
Because you really have to. It's funny because like you obviously have to wait for that weight to settle, and everything is very deliberate. You know, it's like step, like everything is very deliberate. I feel like people get in trouble in mono meets when they just like, if there's no start command, cause like some of like IPA, SPL, like a lot of them don't have start commands. So it's like, they just pick it and go. And it's like, you don't know you fucked up your pick until you're already in the bottom of your squat.
Like, yeah.
It's like already a problem. So where's your stance on like gear? And you're not gonna offend me.
Oh no. Oh, so I have a really good friend that's in Upper Delaware, and he's Aaron, man. He's a sweet dude. love him and his friend Bricker. They come down from Black Flag Barbell.
Okay.
And actually, like, back spot our meets and stuff. Awesome dudes. I love his son Mason. They're sweet people. Always helpful for USBA events. But they compete multi-fly and single-fly.
Yep.
So Aaron's been not pressuring me, but he's like, I can't wait till you crack, you know, 2K Raw so I can finally get you in a suit.
Yeah, I actually, like, he sent me one. I have one of those their shirts, the Black Flag Barbell.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Well, no, he was super excited I was going to be on this podcast with you.
Oh, cool. Yeah. He's a cool guy. I watch their training I don't know them well, but I always watch their training here and there. And it's cool how small our world is. Anyway, so is that something you like? Well, let's start here. How do you feel about like multi-ply? Obviously, single-ply and USPA is like, I don't want to say the same as Raw, but the lifts look very similar with like everything.
Yeah, no. And actually, our friend Amber Alice actually came down. We're good friends with her, me and Jess. And
she's the sickest. She's the sickest. Yeah. Love her.
Yes, she's amazing. Awesome person. And all the people at Unleashed up there at her gym. Wonderful, wonderful people. But she's actually put me in like a lace-up suit and a pair of briefs. And I've dabbled just once with them. And it was pretty fun.
Shame on you.
I know. No, but it's definitely not in the back of my mind. Like, once 2K is done, I definitely would love to give it a shot.
Dude, that's sick. I love it. I didn't know. I actually, like, didn't think of it until I was just, like, scrolling through Instagram, and, like, one of your things, like, came up earlier today, and I, like, had this little, like, moment of, like, oh, fuck, like, I don't know this dude, and I have no idea if he's going to come on here and be like, fuck multiply. You know, like, I don't fucking know. Like, I'm like, shit, is this going to be like some weirdo thing, like, where he talks shit about gear and all this? I was like, oh, fuck. So here we go.
The real reason you and me haven't been scheduled for four different times, so I've been cooking up all my ideas to talk shit on multiply.
Love it.
All my notes written down.
Well, you couldn't say anything I haven't fucking heard already, man. Like, I think we're kind of like past the stage of like the extreme like Raw versus multiply thing. But I guess some nerds are still feeling that way. Like, I don't know. Like, there are multiply guys that hate on Raw lifting and Raw guys. And to me, I'm just like, I don't know, man. I don't really think any pole vaulter would be sitting there talking shit about a high jumper.
To be real with you, every single fly and multiply guy I've met has always been the nicest, humblest, and they're always super helpful at meets. And I will toss way more shit at some, like drug tested, yeah, like fucking raw, true raw fuckboys than I ever will single and multiply.
You know, it's funny, like, I've definitely had those conversations, and like, I think it's because I had a really good conversation with Amber's guy Kyle about this and why we thought that was, like, what would cause that. And I think that it's because in multiply you need a crew. So if you're like a total asshole, you're not going to be able to train.
Yeah, that's very true, man. You need like a whole pit crew for that.
Yeah. So like, I feel like there's obviously raw people that can be really, really good at lifting and do really well and not really need much people like there when they're training, so they can get away with having your shit bum attitude. It's just a funny thing to think about, because I think from the outside looking in, the multiply community looks meaner, I guess, because it's like,
for sure.
like, I don't know. Everybody equates it with just Westside, and that's, which is kind of lame, but it's funny that people kind of like, it's only that we're like mean or fat and bald. It's always like that whole thing with our diaper suits and whatever. So it's really refreshing to hear somebody who's like a really good raw lifter to like say that positive shit, because it gives me hope for the future. Our sport is already small enough. We don't really need more division. As far as like working with USPA and stuff, like, what made you go full in, being a national ref, like being a chairman. I just got the APF chair for New Hampshire, actually.
Awesome, man. Congrats.
Yeah, I'm stoked. It's going to be really cool. We're going to run some sweet meets and stuff. But what made you kind of go head in? Because, you don't have to do that stuff, but obviously you had a calling to it.
So I don't want to get too into like name bashing or anything like that. And
sure.
A lot of people from our area know this story. So we had an unfortunate fallout and some legal stuff with USPA East.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And when that all happened, many of us referees and people we were close with were pretty heartbroken over it. Because we felt like things had been hidden from us, and we were kind of taking positions without, it was basically like a carrot dangling from the stick, but you didn't know what the stick was attached to.
Right, yeah, sure.
And so when that happened, and that split ship and the new Fed formed, everyone kind of looked at me and were like, dude, like, you already give back to the sport, you know the sport, like, you and Jess are it, like, and I was like, I always kind of thought, like, one day I would take that over.
Sure.
But then I kind of got put into an opportunity where I was like, well, fuck it, I'm jumping in the pool.
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude. So do you
and
feel...
I'm going to be real with you, it was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were mixed emotions about it. But I honestly wouldn't trade it for anything, man. It's probably one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Is it like, do you get a sense of like fulfillment with that? Like as far as giving back to the sport, or like what is it to you that makes it so enjoyable and worth all of the like paperwork and headaches and shit?
I mean, honestly, like when we throw meets at the cave, like at my gym, of course, I enjoy throwing meets all over Delaware and Maryland, but, like, when we throw them at home base and, like, you get people driving hours and hours just to come to my gym because they had seen me on Instagram and followed me, and they knew they had a chance to compete at my place. Like, dude, that shit is so humbling and mind-blowing. I'm pretty sure at the end of every single meet we throw at my place, I cry like a little bitch. And like in front of people on a microphone, like
I love that.
Trying to just simply say like thank you for being here. It means a lot. And I never fucking make it through the whole spiel at all.
I love that, dude. That's like just like real talk shit, and also like it speaks for your character, because I think that there's definitely people who would get positions like that, like getting a chair or getting the national ref cert or any of that stuff that like it's an ego thing for them. It's like a beat your chest type of thing. And to hear that from you, it just shows that like it's bigger than you. You know what I mean? Like it shows that like you want to give back to the community. I think that's really important. That's one of the reasons why I kind of tossed my hat in the ring to get the APF chair up here, was because I was like, man, I think we can do better. You know what I mean? Like, I think we can give back to the sport. Is there a lot of like ins and outs of like putting on USPA meets? Like, is it a logistical thing that like
I've been really fortunate to have some really great mentors.
Okay.
USPA North Carolina, I'm very close with Bobby Bolin. George and Bobby have been, while we might not always see eye to eye, like they have been nothing but amazing to me and my wife, and showing us the ins and outs and helping us prepare stuff and just kind of getting us conditioned to do stuff all on our own. And I honestly couldn't be more grateful than most of the people I've met that are, other meet directors and stage chairs.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I haven't been to many USPA meets. It's been, like maybe two, three. But I got a chance to, during, like, middle of, like, COVID wildness, there were drug-tested nationals were in Ohio. And
oh, yeah.
I got a chance to go. I had a I actually had a buddy who was doing like a single ply. I think it was his first single ply or a second single ply meet. And he came out from California to do it there. And I didn't really know what to expect. And the meets are like immaculate. They're so good. Like the way it was run, the setup, the lightings were like the light ups and like all the stuff that makes it like more theatrical. They were like cool, but it wasn't too much. It wasn't like a fucking.
If you were in a, you said Ohio, right?
Yeah.
So that was Chico's meets. Yeah. I've known Chico for a while, and he puts a, that man can put on a show.
Yeah, man, it was really cool. Like he did a great job. I know Chico like not well, but you know, in passing. And yeah, those meets were, it was like really cool to see like the two platforms. And, I think JP was doing, the mic. And so he was kind of like walking around and, you know, like talking shit and getting people stoked. And,
yeah, I just did a meet with him in New Jersey, actually. I was spotting and reffing and doing a handful of other things. And he was on the mic and he was also helping me spy and load for a while. But, he's a, another awesome dude, man. I've done a couple different meets he's been at. We did the Ghost Cup up at, Indy City Barbell.
Okay.
And he was up there, and that was a really awesome two-day event. And then, of course, we just did Never Alone in New Jersey. That was also the benefit for, I believe, the Mike Project.
Okay, which is what?
It's for, like, suicide prevention, mental health.
Okay. That kind of whole thing. Cool. Yeah. Hey, so, speaking of that sort of like, I don't want to say like softer side of things, but I think that it's interesting and something to be talked about. You know, obviously, you know, like upon, like on looks alone, you know, you look like a hard ass, you know, like covered in tattoos, big muscly guy, like, you know, not to pump your tires, you look tough. But but it seems like you have like this real like a softer side of you where you do stuff like that, where you're involved with a charity, where you're, you know, you're giving back to the community. What kind of like drives you in that direction? I'm assuming that's part of like why you teach. Like, can you kind of talk about, you know, talk about that, like what drove you to become a teacher and all this stuff that kind of like when someone looks at you, they might not think that that's the path that you're on.
Yeah, it's really funny because I actually had a kid talk about this the other day. He's like, you know, so I teach 10th grade. So when we do like 9th grade field day or 9th grade like through the building day, they always see all the teachers. So kids, of course, don't have me on their schedule for their first year. But like while they're looking over like end of the year and summer programs, kids will see my name pop up for English. And they're like, you know, I've had kids come up to me like midway through the year this year and be like, you know, Mr. Rogers, like, when I saw your name on my schedule, like, I was so scared to have your class. They're like, every time I see you in the hallway, you look so mean, and, like, I just wouldn't want to make you mad, and you would yell at me. And then they're like, when I had you for class, like, you're funny, and you're, like, the nicest dude ever. And I was like, yeah, I get that a lot. And, I mean, I get looks at, like, parent-teacher conferences and stuff, because, I mean, my whole head's tattooed and stuff, too. So, I mean, I'm sure the parents think otherwise, but then the kids, of course, I mean, the kids back me up. They're like, no, man, he's different. Like, he walks the talk. Like, so, I mean, it's nice to have the kids' support. But I think really when I got into teaching and the charity, when I started, I was working with a strength and fitness program and the football kids, and we had started forming a small powerlifting team. And me and another teacher started taking kids to meets out of our own pocket, which we were broke as hell because we're on teacher salaries and first-year teacher salaries, mind you. So we were like, dude, like, we can't do this forever. And all the kids and all the people that knew me as a referee would send me, like, hand-me-down gear and stuff for the kids.
Sure.
And so that's how we got all that. And then we do RPS meets because they didn't have a membership fee.
Okay.
So yeah. It would help us a little bit with that. So we were really paying for registration and like the hotels for the kids. But even that, I mean, it's pretty challenging to feed 10, 15 year olds.
No shit. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, we eventually were like, dude, there's got to be an easier way to do this. And I started talking to another teacher in the building who had a charity, and she was like, Rogers, like, you should really think about this. And then the summer of 2018 Nationals actually was in Ohio, and that's where I first met Chico. I won that Nationals, and by the time we had gotten back from that, I had been approved by the IRS for a state charity.
Oh, sick.
And then got it pushed forward to federal.
Sick.
So the big thing with that, though, too, was, like, I mean, the kids really needed, like, I teach at a very high poverty, high need school district, a lot of broken homes, heroin busts, things like that. And a lot of the kids didn't have adults that were committed to the things they say they do.
Okay.
So it's like when I told a kid, hey, man, you should sign up for a meet, I'll take you to a meet. And then I actually did it. Kids were like, this dude's the real deal.
Yeah.
Like, they'd never had an adult that, like, would train with them every day, train for an event, and then go do the event with them.
Right, right.
And they were like, oh, this guy's the shit. So the kids, like, started calling me dad and pops, and once that happened, like, it literally just changed everything for me.
Yeah, man, that's, like, when you realize you're, like, literally can, like, change the course of someone's existence, like, that's a very powerful thing, you know, like, being able to see those kids and come through on those needs where they might be otherwise sort of left in the dust. Like, that's huge, man. I'm sure you realize, like, you know, that you're changing lives, but I bet you there's stuff that you don't even realize that has gone through these kids' minds that you've helped them with. And that's so sick to me. And also, I think that it's cool to, like, think about that you're probably changing some perceptions that or preconceived ideas that the parents might have about a dude that looks like you.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like, I mean, I remember, like, specifically, like, multiple occasions where it really kind of hit me hard. And I think so one of my kids, he didn't live too far. I'd say, like, 15 minutes away. So he would walk home after powerlifting practice. And, like, on days there it would rain, the kids, of course, would carpool or get a ride from somebody's parent.
Mm-hmm.
But this kid, he was like, I saw him, and he's walking on the side of the street. And I'm like, hey, man, like, I thought you told me you had a ride. He's like, I did, but they didn't show up today, so I'm just going to walk home. And it's raining. It's, like, pouring its ass off. So I get out of the truck, or not the truck. I had a Subaru back then. That thing was beat the fuck up. I took off my sponsorship, like, windbreaker, and I gave it to him, and I was like, hey, man, like, I don't want you to get soaking wet, like, I don't want you to get a cold and shit, like, you can have this, you don't have to give it back, just take good care of it. And, like, I swear to God, that kid wore that fucking windbreaker every fucking day for the rest of the school year, and was, like, so fucking tickled pink to just be like, they'd be like, oh, who'd you get that jacket from? Oh, no, this is Roger's team jacket, man. This is a team jacket, bro. Like, it was just like, he just thought it was the coolest shit ever. And it's like, you never realize, like, you know, something as small as, like, you know, as a sponsored athlete, like, you know, getting, you know, clothes to lift in and gym gear and cool shit like that. Like, even giving me hand-me-downs and shit like that I don't think about to kids, it's just like, it changes them not only because of what it is, but, like, they have something that's yours, and to a lot of them, that fucking means something, man.
Yeah, it's cool to, like, that's really rad to think about, because it's, like, just a jacket or just a t-shirt or just a pair of wrist straps or whatever, and situations like that with a young kid, it kind of, like, puts it into perspective for you, where it's, like, they've had similar experiences where, like, you take stuff for granted until you see, like, how big of a deal the thing you take for granted would be to someone else. Like, you know, you get a free jacket or you get a free t-shirt, it's like, whatever, you know, cool, grateful, thanks, or whatever. But then if you give it to a kid who didn't have it, it, like, it's the coolest thing in the fucking planet to them. I think you're doing good work, man. I think that's really rad to hear. You never know what someone's going to be like when you get them on a show like this, and, like, when you don't really know them. So I'm happy that you ended up being a cool guy.
Because, well, I appreciate that, man.
Because that's sick.
And now you're making me want to do my first, what are you, APF or APA?
APF.
Yeah, man, now I gotta get my mono skills together and come do my first APF with you.
Fucking right, dude, anytime. Speaking of training, like, let's get into that just a little bit. Like, what's your split like? Like, how do you run your training? Like, obviously, I've seen some of your – I saw what I see, dude, like, the thing that made me be like, all right, I got to fucking message this guy. It was like 722, I think, for like a double or a triple off a 2-inch deficit, conventional, something like that. It was like
– Yeah, usually if I get some wild responses or people asking me shit, it's usually deficit pulls.
I'm like, what the fuck, like, dude? I saw that, yeah, and I was like, all right.
We're like, this dude – this guy throws caution to the wind and just does not give a fuck.
What's your split look like? Like, what's a week look like for you?
So I write all my own programming. I've had a couple coaches in the past. They never really lasted. I've made really good friends with coaches after having them. Like, it hasn't fallen apart. Like, I'm still really good friends with Micah Moreno.
Okay.
And he's the one that encouraged me to do the American Pro because he's running it. So I'm like excited to see him and just be there. But he was like, bro, this is like 4 hours from your house. I'm always in Vegas. Like, if you don't show up, I'll fucking cry. So I was like, all right, I got to do this for my boy. I'm signing up for day one in reps. So
hell yeah.
I've learned a lot from different coaches. And of course, like, I write for Elite FTS for outside submissions. And like, I read a lot of stuff. But I program for a lot of people, but I don't really coach for anyone.
Okay.
And I think the reason that is like when I got into the sport, it was a very much like, you know, thrown to the lion's den. You either did your shit or you didn't do your shit. And it didn't matter if you were with someone or without someone, or there's no one there to hold your fucking hand.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't have someone behind me being like, hey, you got this weird hip placement, or you have this butt wink, or one of your shoulders looks uneven. It was like, you did your fucking shit.
Yep.
And I've always been like that. So I tell people flat out, like, if you're looking for a coach, like, I know some good ones I would recommend and I refer you to. If you're looking for straight up programming and you want to work your ass off, I'm your guy.
Sure, sure.
So a lot of my stuff, I always guinea pig and test before I ever give it to a client. But, except for a couple members of my gym, they like to guinea pig stuff with me, so they go through the bullshit with me, including my wife. My wife enjoys some of the bullshit I cook up. But right now, I've just been running. So this is new for me since I came back from an injury, and I'm actually about to publish a 4-week block on Elite FTS.
Okay.
For free.
Cool.
So it'll be open to the public in a little while. But right now, I've just started incorporating SBD days back into my programming. So Sundays, I usually do a heavy squat, and that's usually on a Duffalo bar. I run banded bench, and I also run banded pulls for that SBD day. So it'll be like a heavy squat, usually like ascending doubles or triples on the Duffalo and wraps. And then I'll do, like, volume banded bench, and then I'll do, like, ascending triples probably on banded deadlifts.
Okay.
Mondays, I usually have a back and leg bodybuilding day.
Okay.
So that'll be all, like, different kinds of rows, pull-downs, a lot of unilateral movements for my legs, stability, shit to keep my knees from blowing off my body. Tuesdays, I usually do heavy bench and an upper bodybuilding day.
Okay.
So that's where lately I've been having really good luck with bench right now. I've just recently PR'd my straight bar, smoked a 470 last weekend.
Sick.
So I think I'm getting pretty close to benching 500 raw by summer for sure.
Sick.
But a lot of stuff I've been experimenting with on the bodybuilding days have been things that don't aggravate my elbow. I have one really bad elbow that doesn't lock out all the way.
Okay.
And it's kind of some nerve damage from a torn shoulder 2 years ago. Wednesdays, like today, I usually transformer squat and reps. I will straight up be honest with you. I am a Kabuki strength whore.
Okay.
I love the Duffalo. I love the Cadillac bar. I love the transformer. Like, they're my jams. Like, if I could transformer squat for the rest of my life every day, I fucking would.
Okay.
I just enjoy it. It's a challenging bar. You can mix it up all the time. I like the curved handles because I have short little T-Rex arms, so they're more comfortable for me. Like, it's just, it's a nice bar. And I'm also very pleased to be sponsored by them now, so it's been great.
Sick.
I just signed our first contract with them that started in January. So it was, they've been unbelievable, super kind, super nice to me. They've been publishing pictures of me, and so it's been an overwhelmingly happy experience for me.
Sick.
Can't speak highly enough of them. Thursdays are usually my heavier pull if I don't take a rest day. And that'll be all the crazy shit you see me doing, like deficit doubles and triples off of like 3-inch blocks. I've been getting to a big pause phase again. I've been enjoying that a lot. I just paused like, I want to say 740 for a pretty decent one. So I was pretty happy with that. But yeah, it's weird because my variations in most everything are almost on par with my normal competition list.
That is fucking weird.
Yeah, so like I've pulled 740, I've deficit pulled 750, and I think my best normal pull is like 755.
Damn, okay.
So they're all within about like 10 pounds of each other, 10, 15 pounds. And I'd probably say the same is true for like bow bar bench and like even like transformer squats. I think my best transformer is like 740 for a double, and my best straight bar squat is probably like 750.
Yeah, so really close.
So they're like really spot on with the numbers there. So like it's weird when I do programming for others because it's like I'm so competent in variations that like I have to remove myself from that situation because I know other people's numbers and percentages won't look like that.
That's how it is with box squats with me, dude. That's the same thing. I have to be like, I don't understand how you squat 100 pounds less without a box, because or 100 pounds or with a box. Like it's the same thing where I'm like, because I'm very good at that, and it's like that's one of the skills of being a coach, though, right? It's like okay, this person is not me. So I'll take myself out of the equation. That's wild, though, with a Duffalo bar to bench close to the same as a regular bar. That's insane.
Yeah, I've actually benched more on a Yukon bar.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, I think my best bench ever is like 480 on a Yukon.
Holy fuck. Okay.
And my best straight bar bench is 470, which is fucking weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
But it's actually the external rotation. So, like, with my fucked up shoulder, if I can externally rotate in, it doesn't hurt, and I can push harder.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I can't do that with a straight bar. Like, with a straight bar, I'll have pain at the top. With a Yukon, I can just kind of blast it, even though it's a longer range of motion.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, the angle would make that, like, better hand placement with, like, and then your elbow and shoulder and, like,
right,
more fixed. That makes sense. Hey, dude, we've made it to 45 minutes. We're closing in on it. I ask the same question at the end of every podcast. I think personal development is important. You've obviously been through a lot, done a lot, still doing a lot, and you've had a lot of, unique experiences. If you could go back to a younger you, maybe a 20-year-old you, and give yourself a post-it note with a piece of advice on it, what would that advice be? It could be about training. It could be about life. It could be about anything you want. But just a short note that you would give yourself, what would you tell yourself as a young man?
My post-it note would say, be patient because everything comes back around full circle.
Fuck yeah, dude. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, always- I will say that is one of the truest things I have ever realized in my life.
Hell yeah, dude. That's a good one.
Every time I think something's abandoned, that shit might come back the next week or it might come back 6 years, but it fucking comes back around.
I love that, dude. That's really good. Hey, do you want to give out like social media? If I know you said you don't coach, but your program, all that stuff, your gym, like where can people reach you? Where can people find you? Drop all that shit.
Okay. So, I'll give a shout out real quick to some sponsors real quick. All my boys, Kevin, everybody, and Kevin and Nick over at Live Large. Been nothing but amazing to me. They treat my wife great. They treat my family here at the Cave great. Can't speak more highly. So if you ever buy anything from Live Large Fitness, no, I appreciate it. And those guys are incredible and do just as much for the sport. Zone Smelling Salts, I've been with them forever. Me and Liam create Bear Down Steel. He gives back to my charity. He's been working with me for 3 years. Great company. Raw Grip does all our chalk for our events. Awesome stuff. Who else? Kabuki, obviously, I already gave them a big shout out. Barefoot Shoes, that's what I pull and bench in. Unfortunately, I'm short and stubby, so I'm not mobile enough to use them for squats, so I'm in heels, but otherwise they're great shoes. But I mean, just everything's great. I appreciate everybody's support. I appreciate everyone that reaches out to me on Instagram. I always try to take the time to answer people's questions and stuff, as long as they're not ridiculous. Like, hey, I like your head tattoo. I'm thinking about getting a head tattoo. Do you think my job will be okay with a head tattoo? And I'm like, yeah, sure, man. Blast it on there. Let me know what kind of raise you get.
What's your Instagram and what's the name of your gym and how can they reach you?
All right. So Instagram is at Papa Bear Rogers. And then my gym is right in my bio, but it's at the Bear Cave USPA MD. MD for Maryland.
Sick. Sick. Well, hey, bro, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I know you're a busy guy. I really appreciate it. And I know that, you know, you're doing good stuff. So keep fighting the good fight. That's all we got for today, guys. Thanks again for listening to the TWC Stay Hated podcast. Ooh, I cut the ending here in too soon. Yo, my personal page, AnthonyCW13. The other page, Trigger_warning_conjugate for all your mental Monday snapback needs. And the gym page now is Anchor Athletics. I think it's Anchor Athletics NH, or it might be Anchor Athletics and Strength NH. You can find that in my bio. Follow that shit. Follow us. That's what we got today. Thanks for listening to the TWC Stay Hated podcast. And as always, stay hated, motherfuckers.